Yeah, like I said, you'll have to pronounce a lot of this stuff because it's all over the place. All right, this is episode 16 of the Chattering Classes, and I'm talking to Wouter Vandervoorde. Is that how you pronounce it?
That'll do.
That'll do. I'll call you Wouter anyway.
Lovely.
Now, Wouter is a teacher, but that's probably the least interesting thing about you, I guess. I'm going to talk about your six, well, probably more than six, depends how many we get through, of your songs today. And I wanted to ask you, have you travelled the world extensively looking at this list?
What do you mean, like through selecting the songs that I'll travel the world, or that I'll travel the world to discover this music?
Well, a bit of both, because I'm looking, there's some from Spain, there's some from, obviously, America, there's some from Belgium.
Well, I've been to all those places.
Syria?
No, but I've Syria, like, some relations that are Syrian.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You have relatives who are Syrian?
What? My mother's cousin married, like, a Syrian painter, like, one of those famous painters of Syria, and they have two sons, and I always, like, used to hang out with them, and...
Amazing.
Swear in Arabic and stuff.
it's really funny because I mean, we'll get to it, but the clip or the I looked up one of the songs and I didn't know it was Syrian, and I was watching it. And my wife used to work for the Syrian ambassador.
And she knew the guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's famous.
No, I didn't know. I didn't. It wasn't that she knew the guy.
Oh, yeah, but she recognized.
But when I looked at it, I was like, this looks like. Oh, because he gave her, as a gift, his wedding DVD, which was four DVDs long, each DVD 90 minutes, I think. When I watched it, I go, this looks like a wedding DVD. And then I looked it up today and I was like, oh, Syrian, it might have been the same.
Yeah.
Wouldn't be surprised me if it's the same director.
Well, he's one of the most famous wedding singers in Syria. It's like his number one wedding singer.
Maybe he is the guy that's in it. Because they do get a guy in and they all stand around looking uncomfortable.
He's been to Australia a few times as well already.
Yeah, I did. I saw he played in Perth.
Best live concert I've ever seen.
Wow. All right, well, why don't we start with that one then? Because it was...
Yeah, or we could start chronologically in time or whatever. Or, I don't know.
We tend to bounce around, so...
Yeah. Yeah, we can start with that. That's fine.
Because I just thought we'd get into.
Well, so it's like this dude is like a.
Lejani. Yeah.
And the artist is Omar Suleiman.
Yeah.
And just like like we were just talking about, it's like a number one wedding singer in Syria.
Wait, his last name's Suleiman.
Suleiman, yeah.
That's the old ambassador's last name.
Oh, there you go. But I think about half Syria's calls.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean it's. Although a lot of music, like, over the past sort of 10 years, I've discovered through, like, a good friend of mine, who's also called Wouter in Belgium.
Yeah.
Sorry, my best friend. And he was always very interested in, like, weird music, and now he's, like, running this, like, he's actually programming music for, like, this venue, and he's got a label and stuff, and, like, he always had listened to the weirdest music, so I discovered heaps of music through him, like, about, I think, half the stuff that I listen to. It's true knowing that dude. So that was one of the people like he introduced me to. I think I was already living in Australia when I found out about this guy. And then I went back 1 year to visit with like Celia and my sister-in-law. And we went to see one of these concerts where the guy was playing. It was like right next to a river.
Yeah.
I was just like right in the middle of the night. It was fucking the best concert I've ever seen. It was like just... You didn't understand anything of what the guy was saying, but it's like just the forceful sort of energy.
Yeah.
And everyone just like you just got to stand there and clap and just bounce around like a little bit, because that's all you want to do. Like listening to that music is fucking brilliant.
I mean, the song you chose, it's pretty 80s synth.
Yeah,
isn't it?
That's like his main hit. That's where he broke through sort of in like this alternative sort of indie scene.
Ya le 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 ya
Because I think now he just recently released a new record, and it's, I think, the first like actual proper studio recording. I've listened to a bit of it, but this is quite rough. It's very rough.
It's very rough.
Yeah, it's nuts.
Do you know who the number one Western artist in Syria is?
No, I don't know.
Christa Berg.
Christa Berg?
Lady in Red, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Makes sense.
They, yeah. he's massive over there. When we went to the ambassadors, to the embassy for like a party, I guess, and it must have been Justine's farewell. He was like, "Oh, Christa Berg," and we were like, "Cool, yeah, Lady in Red." And he was like, "Nah," and spent 20 minutes going through his whole back catalogue of everything. So yeah, I was like, "Where does someone come across this?" But I mean, it's I guess a lot of this music is like that, though. You've come across a lot of different. The main reason I ask is because I remember going out with you one night where we were inside the pub waiting for you to come in, and you were like, after about an hour, we were like, "Where are you?" And we went outside, and you were sitting in the bus stop listening to some Nigerian funk music.
Why not?
Like, how does someone come across Nigerian funk music?
Yeah, I mean, again, lots of music is through, like, DJ friends, and, like, I don't know, I've always been hanging around lots of people who are, like, really into music. And, you just pick up on things. I mean, you just keep the best things and just copy entire, like, libraries of music and just... I don't know, I always liked really weird stuff like that. I always liked to listen to stuff that no one's listening to. Because, I mean, immediately when something becomes popular, sort of... especially when I was young, I was sort of trying to distance myself from anything that was mainstream. It still happens just these days. But it was a huge sort of personality thing, just like it is these days. And, yeah, I don't know, you just want to do different stuff. I just hate it when my sister like started picking up on the music I was listening to. I just couldn't stand that she was.
She didn't even want to share it with.
No, because like person. She was listening to the Pixies and pretending that she discovered the Pixies. Rather, everyone was listening to the Pixies in the 90s.
That old argument about who discovered them. Yeah, that sounds about right. I remember my brother used to get the shits with me because he'd listen to Metallica, and then I'd come in and go, "Oh, I like that." It would be the wrong song to like. It would be the slow song. It'd be One or something like that. Or he'd listen to Pearl Jam, and I liked Better Man off the album. It's like, "Oh no, you've chosen the wrong songs." And so yeah, that's always good. You've got to keep your siblings away from that kind of music.
Especially like, I don't know, I mean,
is he a younger sister?
I got two younger sisters. Two younger sisters.
What? Yeah, younger sisters. Yeah. I was the youngest, so I can imagine annoying my brothers with that kind of stuff all the time. We've got to move on because you've got so many different songs.
Yeah, that's cool.
So the one that you put down first was, again, I'm not going to try and pronounce it, Fantasia, etc., etc.
Yeah. It's basically just a piece of Renaissance music of no one in particular, but it's just the executor, I don't know, who arranged the orchestra, is like the Spanish dude.
Yeah.
Who's sort of pretty renowned for like recreating... authentic like performances of like old music, and even using like actual instruments that were built in that era and stuff, so it's like pretty sort of anal kind of Renaissance music, I suppose. But it's, I don't know, I was brought up on shit like that, like it's like my dad, like while growing up in the 50s and 60s, mainly in the 60s, I pretty much never listened to the Beatles or the Stones or anything. He just listened to classical music. Whereas my mother would listen to like the soft stuff, like Leonard Cohen and stuff like that. And later they would listen to Simon and Garfunkel. But mainly my dad was always classical music, mainly like Bach, like the really heavy sort of shit. And that was like, so I had to discover everything myself, which was kind of cool. Thank you.
I mean, I grew up in like a house with the radio always on, but no one really listening to it. Mm. Or, you know, like Elton John, Beatles, Billy Joel, ABBA, just so mainstream. Oops. That it was the same. I had to discover cool. all that stuff as well, but very rare did anyone say, oh, I got this new thing.
Yeah, yeah. Because we didn't have any television as well, so it was like just music. It was just like that classical music. I just got really, really sick with it.
So you, like, you grew up in Belgium?
Yeah, yeah.
So
I've only been in Australia six years now. So
you've been in Australia 6 years, but in Belgium all the time before that?
Never even moved house.
Oh, okay. Never moved house until you moved to Australia.
Mm. Well, I lived by myself when I was studying.
Oh, okay.
And earlier on.
So what, I mean, we'll get talk about this all the way through, I guess, but what made you come to Australia for to start off with? There's a few questions I've got for you.
Yeah, well, I met Celia while she was studying in Belgium. She was studying, like, philosophy and, like, Hebrew at the Antwerp University because she had a scholarship. And then we just sort of met on MySpace, basically, and then we just started just like communicating, and then we met up. And
so how did you meet on MySpace? Like,
I don't know. I was always like looking at we're like weird people. Like, I was basically stalking MySpace all the time because it was like new and I didn't have anything else to do.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was just looking at interesting people, and she had like a really weird she had like a really weird profile photo. And it was a profile of like a little dinosaur who was saying something random. And then she had the background was like a neon light which was like shaped like a shooting star, with like leather cash in front of it, and I always thought it was like her interior. So I was like, it's really cool that she lived in that little salon that didn't have me outside. And also thought she was Jewish for some reason because her name was like Heinmarsh, and I was like, kind of, I saw this thing for like Jewish girls, I don't know. And then we met up, and yeah, so that's how it happened. And then we just started going out, and then she had to go back to Australia because her visa was running out, and then we got married like sort of half a year after that. So
We
got married here, and then why not just live in Australia? I just thought to give it a shot and just try that, see what it's like.
You strike me as that type of person, though. Just why not give it a shot?
Yeah, just fuck it. Just let's go. I mean, because lots of people fantasize about living abroad, but I mean, you've lived abroad as well. It's just one of those things. I mean, it's not easy to do it, but once you do it, you just can get something out of it. Just like,
I think for Australians, I think moving to England is the easiest thing to do. I mean, compared to other countries in the world where you have to move to or from, like moving to England is just there's no real transition. You've got to get used to a few niggling stuff, but once you do that, then you're like, oh, this is pretty boring. That's what I've found. Like, England's, you know, it's not too different, but living in Japan, that's where, like, a totally different culture. Mm. Well, I mean, it's a generic question, I know, but, like, what are the big differences for you? Were there any transitions you had to make, or?
Well, it was huge. It was a massive transition. I mean, the first year, barely anyone can understand you. I mean, even though you speak perfect English, but like no one can understand you because of your accent. I mean, and I wasn't even teaching then. Luckily, probably. But yeah, and then you just got us. Yeah, just everything. We're just living at Celia's parents for a bit. Then we moved to Wollongong area. Yeah. Celia was going to university there, and then just living in this tiny granny flat behind this old Indian couple's house. And, because I was used to living in, like, a nice, decent-sized loft with everything and having a job. And then we just were living on, like, Celia's Centrelink, basically. So it was, like, $400 a fortnight.
Yeah, being there,
was pretty hardcore. But it was good as well. I mean, it was interesting.
So you grew up in Belgium with your dad playing, like, this classical Renaissance or Baroque, is
Bach,
it Baroque?
Yeah, Baroque, yeah.
And your mum listening to just pretty soft stuff. So,
and French, so lots of French stuff. My mum listens to lots of French stuff, like French 60s stuff. That's a huge influence, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
I always think that, like, I mean, Belgium's pretty good for multilingual.
Yeah. Well, and like, see, we can understand early on, I could really understand English and French and Dutch, obviously. So it's like, so you listen to songs from all these streamings, which is cool.
Very cool. All right, we'll look at the second one you actually sent me, which was going down. Going down?
Yeah. That's well, that's just a Freddie King, song. I mean, it just basically just one out of all the blues I collected through the years, and it's and it basically started a thing with like me wanting to be Jimi Hendrix or something that that I started listening to lots of blues and playing some really shitty blues while on my guitar.
Yeah, it sounds easy.
Yeah, but I mean, it's just. Yeah, I started like reading about Jimi Hendrix because I was so obsessed with Jimi Hendrix, and then I was like finding out all these blues legends he listened to, and then I was like, I bought like the exact guitar he had like at Woodstock, like the same thing.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Just got your Robert Johnson out and just listened to that over and over.
Yeah, just awesome. Like just so blues was just like, I think it was the first. There was a like the CD collection you could get like every week you get a CD, and I remember like first. CD was like Johnny Hooker, and just like listening to that when you're like 16. I think it's also like a universal thing with like kids and discovering blues music. It's very cliche kind of thing.
Yeah,
especially with people of our generation, I guess. Like it's just like a phase you gotta go through. But I mean, to me, it's more than a phase because I generally feel I have a lot of like affection for the genre because it's so entangled in. Everything that comes after it, basically.
Yeah.
So,
oh, yeah, like, it's yeah. So influential, isn't it?
And there's such obscure stuff as well in it, like, it's, I don't know, yeah, it's cool. But, I mean, this is just a catchy, cool song. I mean, again, I discovered lots of stuff through my mate, Walter.
Yeah.
Who's actually plays music himself as well. He plays the weirdest sort of, sometimes bluesy kind of stuff, but he basically puts a guitar and a slap and he plays sort of like piano and then he just like growls with it. Like actually like a sort of a throat chant.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like non-verbal, but it's cool.
And he just chants and plays it.
Yeah, chants and just like growls and sits on stage like that.
So going down by Freddie King, we just worked out this the theme music for Eastbound and Down, which is
which a is great awesome show. It's
freaking me out just trying to work that out.
Yeah, yeah. All of us so offensive.
I looked up Freddie King too. Do you know his nickname?
No.
Best nickname, the Texas Cannonball.
Awesome.
How can you go wrong with that?
Yeah, but if you listen to this music, that's he's just like a fucking train that just takes off. It's just like. Like, what do you call the things that flatten the asphalt road? It's like a...
Like a steamroller.
A steamroller. Just like a fucking steamroller on like a V24 or something. Like a massive engine. Just
yeah, it's got really power, smooth, isn't it?
Just, I'm going to fucking flatten you straight out. It's awesome. And you're happy to be flattened.
So that you were listening to this kind of stuff at 16?
Yeah, 16. I mean, still, this goes in phases. I just like, I keep listening to blues, and I keep wanting to play blues on my guitar, and even though I haven't played it much in recent past years, but it's, I don't know, it's just a thing, blues. It's so fucking cool. I don't know,
So what, I mean, I'm just trying to get a picture. So a 16-year-old living in Belgium, like, I was going to say, what's that like, but that's pretty bland. Mm-hmm. But, like, what's it, what are the challenges you face, like being 16? I think a lot of kids in Australia have problems with like being isolated.
Mm.
They want to go and see all this cool stuff, even around Australia, but it's too far.
Mm.
But did you have any issues like that when you were?
No, not at all. It's just like you're just in the middle of Europe. It's not like you're thinking you're in a shit town. I mean, we're living in a pretty rural village, but I mean, just like 3 hours to go to Paris or like. To couple of hours to go to Brussels or whatever. I just was there anywhere.
Was there any like place that you went, like as when you were young, that really left an impression?
Yeah, yeah. Switzerland. Every year we went for like maybe over 10 years. We went to Switzerland every summer. We went like because my parents were like sort of managing this holiday camp for this organization, so all the kids could always come for free.
Yeah.
And I just went on all these walks, and I was like a tremendous influence. Just not like musically.
Yeah.
But just like to go in Switzerland. That's yeah. It's really I don't know. Just the whole landscape thing. I think I must have done something to me. It's just Switzerland also like really not the most social kind of people. It's I know it's weird people.
What do you mean?
Because they're like genetically used to retreat in the mountains and in the snow and not being able to communicate, and it's sort of ingrained into their whole civilization. Yeah. They'll take tourists, but they're not gonna like be chatty. Like, it's just like, okay, we'll be nice to you just to get your money, you stupid tourist. and they have really shitty like restaurants, just like you would get like at Summernats or something. Or maybe that's like exaggerated. but they have good produce, but they're not gonna like. It's weird. Like every little town has like an atomic war shelter and stuff. Like it's
really.
Yeah, so we visited lots of those, and like it's. Yeah, but no, I just that was weird because my parents were doing this camp. Like I'm basically could do pretty much what I want. Like
yes, yeah. I was gonna say like you said that you went off for walks and stuff. Was that always by yourself?
No, it was always with a group. I mean, I used to like explore the towns we were living in at the time and stuff. And
yeah.
But it was obviously a really group. But still, it's just so tremendous, this whole thing. Yeah, it's cool.
it is cool. All right, well, we'll go on to the next song, which, again, I'm not going to try and pronounce the French one. Jacques Brel.
Yeah.
How do you pronounce that?
Jacques Brel and the Makitba.
Yeah.
Well, that's like a classic, I mean...
Yeah, I'd heard it when I put it on, and there was this sweaty, very ungainly-looking...
Yeah, that's
man sweating away, singing a romantic or heartbreaking.
But I mean, that's
song,
Jacques Brel. I mean, he's sort of an icon. I mean, he's told he described himself as like a guy with a horse head.
Yeah,
a horse. I mean, he knew that about himself, and I'm not gonna go through like his entire biography, but
yeah.
But he's like I know he used to like vomit before and after he got on stage because it was just so intense about like everything, and it's just like he's Belgian.
Yeah.
I mean, but from French speaking, I lived in Brussels a lot of his life.
Yeah.
But it's like almost a French wanting to be like French as well because he's just so tremendous. I mean, and like the song "The Makitba" is actually Nina Simone even covered that.
Yeah.
With a really bad accent, that's really weird. Me personally, but it's not just an intense song, and just like the metaphors that are in it, just like I just can't listen to it and not like tear up because it's so intense, and even without looking at his face, you can just feel it. Just I don't know, and all of his songs are like that. Like some are really like humoristic and stuff, but some of it was just really dark and existential and he sings about like Brussels and like and Belgium. Like one of the famous songs is like the "My Flat Country, My Flat Land."
Yeah,
there's also like typical like sort of, I know it's like really sort of embedded the Belgianness in it. I don't know, but also like the sort of dramatic nature of it.
It doesn't have any real like. There's no lilting music. There's no like sway of emotion. It's just his voice, pretty clean.
And but just the stories, like, and just the metaphors are in, just so full on. It's really beautiful. And I was listening to that fairly young as well, and you can just, like, listen to that when you're, like, 17, and you're, like, you're heartbroken or whatever, and just, like, listening to shit like that, it just sucks you in.
Ne me quitte pas. Je t'inventerai des mots insensés. Tu comprendras, je te parlerai de ces amants-là qui ont vu deux fois leur cœur s'embraser. Je te raconterai l'histoire de ce roi mort, de n'avoir pas eu de rencontre. On a vu souvent rejaillir le feu
de l'ancien volcan qu'on croyait trop vieux. Il est, paraît-il, des terres brûlées donnant plus de blé qu'un meilleur avril. Et quand vient le soir, pour qu'un ciel flamboie, le rouge et le noir ne s'épousent-ils pas, ne me quittent pas.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing.
Anyone who understands pain is always pretty good for a 17-year-old to listen to.
That's it. But I mean, this guy is so. I mean, he died as well. I think he committed suicide. Or like, I mean, he was like coke abuse and like went to live in on these islands. I keep forgetting, like Belize kind of islands, to be with like exotic women and stuff. And like, it's really tragic, kind of dark figure, but still so influential. Like it's. There's like this young Belgian artist who like recently covered one of his things, won like all these French Emmys just like recently.
Yeah.
That's kind of funny.
Just covering all his stuff. So getting back to I guess the change from living in Belgium to living in Australia. With any like cultural difference, it's always good to get outside perspectives on your own culture. I remember coming back from Japan and noticing a lot more about Australia than I would have thought.
Yeah, well, I'll try to keep thinking about it like I'm not from here because it's much more fun. not because I'm Australian now too.
It's yeah, just, that's right. When did you get your citizenship?
I think last year.
Last year,
yeah.
And was it particularly difficult, the process to go through?
No, it was much more difficult initially to go through all the stuff you had to go through, and then with the skill recognition and stuff. That was all much harder than getting the citizenship.
What's skill recognition?
Well, just to get my diplomas recognized and the English test, etc. That was all much more painful.
When the actual citizenship.
That was just that you just get that after if you don't fuck up in the time you're here.
Oh, okay. That's handed over to you.
And you do a little test.
So do you have dual citizenship?
Yeah.
Handy. So yeah, well, like any major like differences or?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, when I just moved here, I had a lot of time just to do nothing, just to listen to music, and I think then I started photographing, etc. But like, I don't know. I just sort of was really obsessing. When I just moved to Canberra, I just had so much time. I'm not repeating myself, but I just spent so much time in the library of the university because Celia had to go there to study. And I was just like looking at like Aboriginal art and books, reading stuff about it all the time because I didn't have anything to do. Because I was really interested in it, and I also saw it was like a way to understand this place because I didn't really find a way sort of to. Try to comprehend this place. It's just so weird. It's like, where all the fucking like this is Australia. It's like, I mean, living on a island, like this, like their land or something. But like, where the fuck? Where are they?
Yeah.
And I just couldn't like get it. And every time I tried to talk to someone about it, everyone got like really offended. Like,
it's a topic that just never gets discussed. Never discussed, and I don't know why. It's very weird.
I just find it really weird, and I felt like I was like offending everyone all the time. Like it's like, where are they? Like,
was it people just being offended, or were they just saying, "No, don't worry about it"?
You just felt that even like talking to my in-laws and just random people, like you just felt that the people are prefer not to like talk about it. Not that they are sort of like, oh, but it was just like this vibe about it. Like, whereas I mean, we were also like doing all this shit in Europe, like not that long ago. It's not like, oh, look at Australians really fucked it badly. I mean, Belgium's done some horrific things around the world, like in colonial age.
Yeah.
But it's like, so it's just weird, but it's that they never sort of like, it was never like processed. Like the Germans sort of went on after the Second World War. Like, I mean, they sort of rebuilt themselves and dealt with the guilt, etc.
Well, I think I heard something, a guy the other day. They had protests in, what, 68, maybe, in Germany, where the youth finally said, because for the 20 years after the war, they didn't talk about it. They didn't talk about it. And then all the youth were like, this needs to be addressed and no one's talking about it. And so then they went the other way and said, well, let's talk about it fully. But it just doesn't happen in Australia. We just push it away and go, it's in the
and
past.
I find that mental, I find that crazy that that's such a thing, like living with that. It just seems strange.
And I think the culture itself does live with that, and it sort of festers away.
But it's so wrong. I mean, it's so weird. Like, I mean, the worst thing is for me, it's like, not the worst thing, but it's like that, like the whole thing with Aboriginal art, I find just like symptomatic for for this country? Like, is this how they? I mean, you probably know, but I mean, like, it was never like recognized that as actual art until there was like this huge exhibition in Paris, like in 1980 or something, with Aboriginal art and not showing it as like colonial art or like as like indigenous weird art.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, look at the earth colors they use. It's beautiful, isn't it? They're so skilled at this. Look at them just dotting away.
Yeah,
you know, it's like, and it was just like exhibited as proper art. Like, yeah. And in the 1980s, it's way past all like this like postmodernism we're talking about already. Yeah. So people were like open to seeing stuff like that. And then Australia, they started realizing, okay, oh, maybe it's actually art what they're doing. So it's not just like some tribal crap.
We don't go and pat them on the head and say, good boys.
Then, and lots of stuff originates from back then, because that's where people started buying it.
Yeah, exactly.
And that just means me like obviously that's not fair to compare to you, but I mean, we art, stuff that was made like 1,000 years ago is like solid art.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, and even earlier stuff on is just like, it's so valuable, and it's a huge part of the culture. And I mean, and then knowing that this wasn't taken serious until like 1980, just like, that's just mental. That's just insane.
I mean, we're getting way off the topic, but the thing that drives me nuts about it is the whole referendum that they had in 1967 about giving Aboriginals the vote, and they all pat themselves on the back. The politicians of the time and still continuing, they pat themselves on the back and say, "Yeah, we did the right thing." But when they had the referendum, the percentage of people who wanted who voted for Aboriginals to get the vote was 98%. Now, if you need a referendum to tell you that 98% of the population agree with, then you're 40 years too late, at least. So a lot of that stuff goes on in Australia, where it's just, we just push it until it's not just the majority, it's unanimous.
Yeah.
But anyway, we got well off topic, but... Yeah. Yeah, I can imagine. And what tends to happen, and what I found, is people who have come here from other countries to live know way more about Aboriginal history, culture, and art than Australians do.
But I mean, it's different. If you just grew up here, everything is normal. But it's like, to me, that's the history of the country. That's it, the Aboriginal art.
Well, even when I was at school that we were taught from Captain Cook arriving in 1778 or whatever, in 1780, I don't even know the dates, where he turned up in 1770 and discovered Australia. You were taught, you know.
But yeah, I mean, it's easy to like dismiss this because it's not a verbal culture, not a, like a, it's just storytelling, but nothing written down. So it's just like, it's hard to sort of dismiss like a.
Yeah, and I think the guilt of just trying to kill them all off sort of.
Oh, has a lot to do with it. Especially because no one talks about it.
No, certainly not.
It's strange, man.
Well, anyway, enough about us. We'll get back to you. The next song that you put was Katie Cruel.
Oh, yeah.
By Karen Dalton.
Yeah, that's one of those weird songs. Again, probably I discovered through the other water. But it's like this really weird sort of folk... this really weird folk... musician, like a banjo player.
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't know, there's something, the lyrics of this song is just like, there's something really weird about it. And like I met with someone who was like playing banjo and was actually trying to play it, and she says it's like practically impossible to mimic because it's like really detuned and stuff, and it's just such a really mythical kind of thing. It's like a, I don't know, sort of Bob Dylan essence with LSD or something, or but so something weirdly engaging about it, but also really weirdly like surreal. And then her voice is just such a
voices.
I don't know. It's like, it's strange, but I think it's really cool. It's
I think a lot of the music you have here requires like a lot of attention. You know what I mean? Like, you have to concentrate. You might have to give it a chance, like the first time you hear it, to go, oh, I need to listen and get it. It's the same with a lot of music that you hear that people introduce you to. You've got to sort of train your brain into to listening. But were you into this when you were living in Belgium?
No. It's like I had lots of time in Australia to listen to music I like brought over with me. I mean, through guitar and stuff, you're always like connected to folk. But I mean, also through my mates, because he was listening to, him playing music, he was listening to all this really weird sci-folk, and like there was a huge sort of wave of weird stuff. Like, there's some fucked up weird folk music of like LSD.
Yeah, it's pretty dark.
Who are like LSD Christians and stuff like stuff like that, or like, or even like that, like Marilyn Manson, like brought out this music as well. It's just so fucking dark, and also like outsider folk and like weird sort of darkness.
When I first came to town, they called me the Roving Jewel. Now they've changed their tune, call me Katie Crew. Through the woods I'm going, through the boggy mire, and straight way down the road till I come to my heart's desire.
Are you? Do you see yourself as a bit of an outsider?
Oh, I don't know. Possibly. Yeah.
I mean, here, but also when you lived in Belgium.
Yeah. I don't know. Possibly. I like to look at things from a distance, but I like to be part of things as well. I mean, but I like to observe.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah. And how does that go with teaching?
Well, I like to be in the attention.
Yeah,
it's good to have attention. Like I don't like to be in groups anonymously. I'd rather have people pay attention to me or be totally ignored, but nothing like in the middle. If I'm annoying, I don't know.
I understand that 100%.
I don't like I just like big concerts and stuff. I don't know.
Yeah,
that's nothing for me. I like to be on a stage, something people listening to me, even though there's nothing to say. I don't know. It's just something's weird about crowds, and the classroom is just like perfect for it, because you know they have to fucking listen to you.
They do have to listen. We have to make them listen. Anyway.
Make them listen. Yeah. So,
but I get what you're saying exactly. That I'm the same. Everyone's paying attention to me, or no one's paying attention to me.
Because otherwise you're just like a social butterfly or mothing around.
That's not you. You're not a social butterfly. Around.
Oh, I can if I'm drunk. but. Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, I mean, I certainly cultivated sort of the whole outsider thing. It's cool, I mean, to just, I don't know, observe. Mm-hmm. I mean, it comes with being a photographer as well, I guess. I mean,
yeah, I wanted to get into the photography side of it. Now, I heard a rumor you were trained, or you've been to art school, is that right?
Oh, I've been to, I have 2 masters in art from Belgium, like the Royal Academy of Fine Arts in Ghent.
Yeah.
So I studied painting and I studied like printmaking. So I got 2 degrees in that.
So where did that come from? Like,
I always wanted to be an artist.
Yeah.
So from when I was like 16, 17, I've always done art school, and it was always like my happy place compared to school. I just went to art school like on the weekend or.
Oh, okay. So that night. was separate. So
yeah. And I mean, I was art at school, but I mean, art school was like separate.
Yeah,
did that, and I was like, I was much happier there than in school always. And let me, because my school was like, high school was like co-ed, but then it was all boys schools. So at high school there were like girls and stuff, and like, and I could just like excel because I was way better at drawing stuff than like doing boring school stuff mainly.
Yeah.
So it was also like my happy place. So it was like a logical thing for me. Like, why wouldn't you want to do art? I mean, it's so much nicer.
Yeah.
So much better than everything else. So, and I just went to it. And painting seemed like, I wanted to do something like that's not applied, just like really, I didn't want to like do graphic design or anything, or I just wanted to do like art, like the purest thing. And painting is like one of the old school things, like sculpture, painting, printmaking is like one of the main pillars of art. And in living in Europe, where you got such an amazing art history, that was what I wanted to do. So it was just paint like for 4 years. I mean, after years off, I just paint with the easel, paint oil paints. I feel depressed if you didn't paint for a couple of days, and that was my life for a long time.
Wow, it's, and does that, do you still paint? Is that
sometimes I do paint. I mean, it's just one of those things. I could pick it up whenever I want to, but I mean, for the moment, I'm taking photos. And but I mean, it's all as a painter, I guess, in a way, because it's just so much where I come from.
So the photography you do now, like you just go, don't you? Just seems to be. You just get in the car and do road trips.
Yeah,
and...
we just, like, I got a good friend, Jamie, and a few other friends, but mainly with Jamie these days, when we just go, or when I'm on holiday, I wouldn't put myself into photographer mode, I'll go as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, just a drive to, I mean, a drive and drive and a drive, drive to drive, because it's true. It's like, I always say it in class as well, it's true doing stuff that other stuff happens. Nothing's just going to come out of the blue. If you want to be a photographer and you want to take photos of, like, places that are not just like your bathroom or your kitchen, then you got to go to places.
Yeah.
And even though, hey, you never know, you just got to do it to be able to do stuff. And now I'm just like addicted to it. Like, I just, if I can't have a one roll of film developed every week, I'll get a bit busy. I'm kind of annoyed. Like, so my lab knows that. They usually to see me every Monday. I'll be there 8 o'clock with a film.
Wow.
And I never took photos much before when I was in Belgium, man.
Yeah.
And just happened through moving here. I just, like, really organic. Like, it's not like one day I'm like, I'm gonna be a photographer. It just happened. Because I just started sharing images online and I just created a blog, and I had the photos that were really descriptive initially, but then it became sort of its own thing, and I was just like my own weird photos of the place. So, like, it's funny, like, my 92-year-old grandmother, like, follows my blog, and, like, and lots of other people are just like, but it's just a weird, disjointed sort of tourist version of, like, Australia. I mean, they're like holiday snaps of, like, a lifetime holiday or something. I don't know, it's something strange, but yeah, I mean, it's a system. Well, no, it's not a system. No, it's just something I have to do to keep myself sane. It's just like, if I would be just teaching, I would get really cranky. I mean, it'd probably be different if we'd have kids or anything, but it's like, but I got really annoyed if I don't.
So you photograph. So you did all that art at Masters, but then what led you to teaching then?
Well, when I was teaching in Belgium already, my dad sort of told me, like, that I should do my teaching degree with it, and then I sort of did that really reluctantly because I didn't want to teach, because everyone in my family are basically teachers.
Oh, okay.
Because what else are you going to live from? I mean, it's like, even though everyone in our school thinks they're going to be the next
struggling thing, artist,
like, it's, or the next big artist. I mean, like,
that romance of being a struggling, starving artist doesn't last.
No, I was going to be a struggling artist, so we're going to be successful artists or really unsuccessful.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it worked out pretty well. I mean, teaching here is pretty good. I mean, I could never get a teaching job in Belgium like I have here, teaching the subjects I teach, because it's a whole different system.
But it's more structured, or it's more...
Well, there's much... The art is just... There's only a few specialized, like, art schools where you have more art-oriented subjects, but then, like, normal high schools just have, like, visual arts, which is basically just, like, painting and drawing something. So I would have to go to maybe, like, 3 different schools to just teach visual arts to get a full-time
for example. Oh, okay.
So it's pretty shitty.
Well, I mean, I know, like, you like going off-road too, because I remember when we had that chemical explosion in Mitchell a few years ago, and I think they cancelled school, which was a great day,
Bloom day.
Yeah, well, I remember sitting with all the teachers having coffee or something, and someone said, "Oh, where's Wouter?" I said, "Oh," he sent me a text saying he was climbing through a fence to get to a better vantage point to take a photo of the chemical fire.
Shit happens. You gotta try to be there. I mean, it's like, I'm not a press photographer, but if stuff happens, I still wanna have a part of it. Like, it's the same with fires and stuff. It's just this thing.
Yeah, I saw some photos you had of, like, we're doing backburning. You're taking some photos. Research that I'm going to do backburning?
Usually sometimes I research it, or I've got it on my Twitter feed, or I just try to find out what's happening. Yeah. And I just go there and try to smooth talk the firemen.
I was going to say, this is the point. This is the interesting thing I want
to
know.
Oh, just talk to them. I just go talk to them. Because I used to just, like, sneak up and then... And then, oh, what you doing? But now it's like, hey, how you going? And some, I already know some of them too. So
you just say, can I take photos?
And they usually say, just stay behind this line, and that's fine. And then it's always funny because you got a lot of people, like, looking from behind fences, and then, like, oh, this guy's special. But I would actually want to get like a proper outfit so I can actually go take proper photos with them, because I think they have, like, an official photographer.
Oh, really?
But they have already someone. But I would love to, like, look more into that. But
stereotype of a man to want to look at fire.
Yeah, it's so amazing, fire. Just, yeah. Yeah. I used to burn my paintings and stuff. Like, I used to be known, I used to be a bit known as a pyromaniac.
Oh, really?
And at university.
Well, I guess if you go looking for backburn and have a close look, then I guess that sums
it
up.
I used to burn, like, huge paintings and stuff.
Wow.
Inside, in the studio.
In the studio? Like, as art or just for something?
Yeah, I used to put, like, a spray can and I was, like, burning and, like, the oil paints, like, melts. Melts down and stuff. It's cool. Pretty, very toxic. Like a
white spray. Yeah, I was going to say, you're doing inside.
Nice. I mean, lots of artists used to get, like, the, what's it called? Like, OPS or something, like, organic psycho syndrome from breathing too many, like,
all the paint
white spray fumes and stuff. So you get, like, early dementia from it. But, I mean, I don't know, I haven't painted enough to get that.
Okay, we get it. Well, we'll move on to one which is, I guess, a very surprise to be on the list, which is Sugartown.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I sort of took it off when, like, reviewing it.
Nancy Sinatra?
Well, I just, the only thing I like about it is, do you know what it's about, actually?
No.
Well, that's the only thing I like. I mean, this is, like, one of the songs I listened to, like, so consecutively for, like, a long time, because it's, like, yeah. But then I actually found out what it's about, and it's actually about LSD.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's actually about Sugartown.
They used to, like, take the sugar cubes.
Yeah, sugar cubes, and, like, but everyone thinks it's, like, this, like, nicely sugary song, but it's just, like, about choking your balls off, basically. It's sort of a funny song, but that's about the only thing, yeah. I gotta say about it.
So you
used to... Billy Hazelwood and Sinatra are pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah, they're...
I got some troubles, but they won't last. I'm gonna lay right down here in the grass. And pretty soon all my troubles will pass. Cause I'm in Sugartown. I never had a dog that liked me some. Never had a friend or wanted one. So I just lay back and laugh at the sun. Cause I'm in Sugartown.
Like, I put it on this morning, and again, Justine was like, oh, I know this song. And
yeah, it's classic.
She was like, it's on, again, like, it's a soundtrack. But that's how we live our entire lives trying to work out. So it's an LSD song.
Yeah. Sugartown.
There's so many of those. When I taught it, I taught at a school, and one of the teachers did a whole unit on music. And one of the sections was, like, drug references and songs. So he just got to listen to, like, 60s, mainly 60s, 70s music, and just go over all the drugs that were in songs, freaking the kids out. Well, I tend to do that too. Now, I just wanted to, you know, just quickly get back to teaching. And you said you liked, you know, standing up and talking to them and having, they have to listen to you. Was it difficult when you started with your accent and...
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, teaching high school is not the easiest thing.
No, because I started, like, at the one school in Melba.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it was difficult because, I mean, people, because Korean couldn't understand me, and, like, and it's just as a relief, you just had to just try to not get the kids to kill themselves and stuff, or each other.
Yeah.
But then, I don't know, you just learn, and, like, I don't know, I probably was a bit of a struggle and I'm really full on, like, initially. And it's still full on at times, obviously. But, yeah, I don't know. It's... Yeah, just manage with it, I guess. It's just like with anything else in life, it's ups and downs. But just, like, having the structure of, like, just having to get up every morning, go and do your fucking job. And like, I mean, that's in school, because, I mean, there's so many cool people who've been in your show as well that are at school. So it's like that just makes it twice as fun to work at the place you work, basically.
Yeah, it's the old thing about the people you work with, isn't it?
Yeah.
But you don't have any issues, what was I going to say, like with the teaching profession? Like, you don't have, like you said before, like you couldn't teach in Belgium as freely, I guess, as you can do in Australia.
Well, it's just the thing, it's just like this, they have decent amount of means here and like resources and stuff, but it's just like then... Yeah, no, I don't know, like, just groups of, like, 25 kids. I mean, they try to, like, got too many kids in this classroom and every school is really full. I mean, but it's, I just don't feel, it's good that I got my, that I've got like classes that are that big, but I feel like it should be like less than 20 or something to get, I make the most of it. Because I mean, it's much more fun. I mean, it's not that I talk all the time just and want people to listen. I actually find it much more interesting if actually you can work with kids on projects then that they would they bring up themselves or something and try to get that to fit in the curriculum or whatever. I find it much more interesting and stimulating if kids come up with their own stuff.
You find it hard that the kids can be quite boring at times?
Oh, of course. Like, I mean, it's just like you just got a lot of time you just got to spoon feed it like step by step and like scaffold whatever they have to do and like and it's a minority that actually has stuff.
Yeah,
to say. I mean, because you're so young, I mean, like,
yeah.
But it's just a paralyzing thing. It's like, what am I gonna do? What am I gonna make? And it's like with anything. If you're gonna keep focusing on that, then like, you're not gonna amount to much creatively. If you keep focused on like, what am I gonna do? Because if I keep thinking about what photo I'm gonna take or what painting am I gonna make, it's you just start painting, just drive away, start taking photos. That's how stuff happens, not by making stuff up in your head. It's the same with writing, with anything.
Yeah.
So I'm a big believer of that. I'm just trying to get that as a habit, I guess, for them to do, which is
pretty idealistic. But
yeah, I mean, you have to, I guess, in art, especially any kind of art, you have to do.
Because I mean, lots of if you study at like in university art as well, I mean, they're not going to keep telling you what to do. You got to come up with shit yourself. I mean. That's the thing. Like it's I've been taught all the time to do specific things. I mean, you can't build up your own stuff.
They do get paralyzed by is this right?
Hmm.
Is this right? Is this wrong?
But on the other side, that's also so much focus on like what does it mean? What does it mean? All that bullshit. I'm not interested in. It's like what does it mean? No, I'm a teenager. I'm actually yeah. That's obviously what it's gonna mean, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
There's benchmarks for like art. Like, I mean, maybe it's harder for visual art, but it's like anything like photography and like more graphic things. There's like things you can measure, like someone's skill.
Yeah.
Rather objectively, so I really believe in like it as a trade, as an actual skill that you can measure. It's not like airy fairy stuff. I mean,
yeah. What's the same like teaching drama is. You can measure it. It's difficult, but people are. I think people in general do you get a wide berth at school? Like, does your like superiors do they just leave you alone?
Yeah.
Because I find like any kind of art, the people above you kind of like they don't get it.
No, because I would run away.
You would run away.
Yeah. I don't know. If I already feel like I do so many like little things that are just like on top of my workload, I don't feel like I need to be told what to do. I mean, I don't think people know that. It's probably scary of me.
Yeah, I think you get a sort of a free pass to any kind of art. If you're an artist, in air quotes, I think people tend to go, oh, don't understand art, and they tend to back off.
Well, which is cool. Which is awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
Because, I don't know, otherwise it's set tasks to, like, everyone's doing Australia-wide. Like, how's that interesting? I mean, I do exhibitions. I mean, I got published things. I mean, it's like I know what's going on in photography, so it's like, why can't I just use it in my teaching or in my other?
All right, we're nearly going to run out of time, so we're going to look at the song "Going All Out."
Yeah,
by the Raw Cotics.
Raw Cotics. That was like back when I started studying in Ghent. So when I moved, I just started hanging out with these like sort of really cool hip hop dudes.
Yeah.
Like, and they were just like I wanted to be hip hop. It was fucking awesome.
Yeah. What years was?
That was like probably 1999 or something.
Yeah.
And I thought really cool. Just listen to all these records, all the sort of other things that come with the whole scene and stuff. And I know some of the songs we were listening to was like really cool, like just like some mad French hip hop and like all really really cool stuff. And I've always been kept listening to hip hop because it's just such a mad energy you get from it. And that's like this "Going All Out" song is just one of those songs they sometimes played when I was at my mate's place back in the day. They sometimes played this record, and I always wanted to get played back, but I never like knew which one it was. I just remember it was like sort of a classical sort of loop with then some like Spanish rapping in it. I always thought it was like really sick. I think it's more like a one trick pony, that band or something, or Rockotics. I never heard of them much, but it's just such a nice and flowy song.
I tried to find, I could find out the actual song, but getting any information.
No. It's a cool, I love the Spanish like little bit in it. It's just it's pretty sort of aggressive and like, but it's like a really nice loop and stuff. And it's, I don't know, there's again so much hip hop. It's similar to the blues song. It just like represents sort of that sort of part of my musical preference, I guess. I mean, hey, yo, partner, I gotta give you all the benefit of the doubt. You know, Dominicans go all out, but we don't think about the penalties. The only thing I ever caught was the felony for busting the enemy. Yo, partner, I gotta give you all the benefit of the doubt. You know, Dominicans go all out, but we don't think about the penalties. The only thing I ever caught was the felony for busting the enemy. Yo, oye, mano, nosotros hociamos mano a mano, pero ten cuidado, hay policía por todo. Somos cuatro dominicanos amados. Si un cliente está raro, lo tumbamos a la franca. Fuego a la lata, a la buena o a la mala, nadie sale de esta casa. Si no me pagan, nada. Cuando el capitán habla, nadie ladra, nadie falta. Lo firmo en alta, bajé de quinta a cuarta. Cuando estaba todo, agarató, pasado, carro, paró, caló, vaya copió. Vámonos, vámonos, vámonos. The only A I ever caught was the felony for busting the enemy, your partner. I gotta give you all the benefit of the doubt. You know the Dominicans go all out, but we don't think about the penalties. The only A I ever caught was the felony for busting the enemy. Yo, 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 check it out. Dominicans go all out, bust a nigga in his mouth. Word up. I remember I had like Nikes, and then I just had like one pair of trousers who was like a bit sort of more baggy, but it was never like actually baggy trousers. It's just a weird out with my Nikes, and my hair was really short. And
did you have one of those beanies that went up?
No. But I was just like hanging out with these dudes and started to just assimilate their style a bit. And just hanging out. And we would like paint together as well and stuff. And I was just like, they would like, you do like illegal graffiti, and I was filming that because I was doing some video stuff back then as well. So that was like pretty exciting.
Yeah, nice.
Listen to hip hop.
Cool. So antisocial, that music, obviously.
Very antisocial.
Just fitting into that. Oh, dear. We're going to wrap it up. It's been a pleasure. I've probably got about 50 more questions for you.
No, that's cool.
With all this stuff, but that's been cool. That's it.